So, we will go on to case number 4, Appeal 092310, United States v. DeWitt Fife. Hi, Mr. Johnson.
May it please the Court, my name is Mel Johnson, and I represent the United States in this case. The appeal raises one question, that is, was the defendant's conviction for armed violence under Illinois law in 1989 a violent felony, making him an armed career criminal under Section 924E of Title 18? Now, this Court already answered that question, yes, in 1996. Previous conviction of Mr. Fife's, and the Court did it in a way that's perfectly consistent with present law, both procedurally and substantively. So there's no basis to change that answer now. Since armed violence is not an offense enumerated in the definition of violent felony, it can be a violent felony only under the so-called otherwise clause. That is, it's a crime that otherwise involves conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another. Armed violence is defined as the commission of any felony under Illinois law while armed with a dangerous weapon. So it's obvious that that statute, the armed violence statute, can be violated in many ways as there are felonies under Illinois law. When a statute, by its structure, can be violated in various ways, then the case law teaches that the approach in determining whether this crime is a violent felony is the so-called modified categorical approach. That's an approach in which the Court is to review the materials in the record, not to focus on the details of whatever the defendant specifically did, but to define the offense of which the defendant was convicted.
In Illinois, is the jury required to identify which felony it found?
Yes, it is. I've cited, it's at page 3, I think, of my reply brief, Illinois Pattern Instructions on Armed Violence, which state that the underlying felony is an element of the offense, and then the commentary under it tells Illinois trial judges that they are to instruct the jury on the underlying felony. So it's an element. And procedurally then, to define armed violence here, you need to look at the underlying felony. That is, what felony was Mr. Fife committing while armed with a dangerous weapon? And it makes
felony,
sense.
I guess, would be self-defining. You don't need to go into details of what it did, but just by the name of it itself, I guess, in this case, some drug transaction.
Well, for instance, in this case, the underlying felony was possession of cocaine with intent to distribute while Mr. Fife was armed with a gun. Now, that is an appropriate inquiry to determine that that was the offense of conviction, but it would not be appropriate to go into the records to determine, did Mr. Fife point the gun? Did he brandish the gun? Was the gun loaded? Did he fire off some warning shots or all these other details that might or might not have been true? That kind of inquiry into the details of his actions would not be appropriate, but defining the offense is, especially in a case here where it could be the statute could be violated in so many ways. Back in 1996, this Court's opinion, for example, drew a contrast between someone like Mr. Fife, who's carrying a gun while distributing cocaine, between that and I think the opinion referred to the example of a college professor who's filling out a false Illinois income tax return in his office while he happens to be carrying a gun. The first example, Mr. Fife's example, certainly is dangerous. The professor's example, much less so. So this modified categorical approach is exactly what the Court did in 1996. It looked at the record not to determine exactly what Mr. Fife may have done with the gun or any other details, but to determine what he was convicted of, and they correctly determined that the crime was, for violent felony purposes, was carrying a gun while possessing cocaine with intent to distribute. Then this Court in 1996 went on to determine whether that offense created a serious potential risk of physical injury to another and reached the inescapable conclusion that, yes, it did. We all know from our experience in dealing with many cases that the business of drug dealing is a dangerous business that has a great potential for violence and injury. And I don't think any of us here, including Ms. Joseph, would argue that it's not a dangerous situation to have a gun while you are selling drugs. However, the defense argues that, be that as it may, a different result is required here because of the Begay decision by the Supreme Court, an intervening decision in 2008. Now, that argument by the defense is not a correct one because the substantive requirements set forth by Begay are easily satisfied in this case. Begay substantively set forth a couple of requirements for determining whether something was a violent felony under the Otherwise Clause. One of the requirements is that the violent felony must involve purposeful, violent, aggressive conduct, and the other is that the violent felony should be roughly similar in kind and degree of risk to enumerated offenses in the definition, including burglary, arson, and extortion. Well, those requirements are satisfied here. Mr. Fife's armed violence was purposeful, violent, and aggressive. The possession of a gun while selling drugs is a purposeful act. Mr. Fife knew probably better than we did, or than we do today, that drug dealing is a dangerous business. It's fraught with potential for violent disputes with other drug dealers. It's fraught with potential for violent disputes with the police if they attempt to apprehend you. And so having a gun when you're engaged in activity you know is dangerous and can be violent is a purposeful act. This is not a strict liability offense, as the Supreme Court considered in Begay. It's also not a recklessness offense, as this Court considered in the Smith case, which is mentioned in the briefs. As noted in several Illinois cases that I've cited at pages 15 and 16 of my primary brief, the armed violence statute requires knowledge and specific intent, not recklessness. This offense by Mr. Fife was clearly purposeful. It was also violent and aggressive. That was recognized by this Court in 1996 when it held that this crime had a serious potential for physical injury to another. As we've talked about, guns and drugs are a dangerous mix, and a gun is a violent and aggressive option that a person gives himself if he carries a gun while involved in this sort of activity and expects that troubles may arise. So the purposeful, violent, aggressive conduct aspect of Begay is certainly satisfied, and so is the aspect that Mr. Fife's armed violence be similar in kind and degree of risk to the enumerated offenses, burglary, arson, and extortion. And interestingly, although this was 12 years before Begay, this Court already found that in 1996. The opinion found that it was similar to burglary, arson, and extortion, and that finding was correct and is still correct. None of those offenses require force or violence or any injury to anyone, yet each of them creates a dangerous situation that includes an unreasonable likelihood of violence or physical injury to others. And that's certainly true of carrying a gun while selling dope. I would suggest
48 months. What if we were to reverse, what would he be exposed to?
He would be exposed to the mandatory minimum for armed career criminal. That would be 15 years, so 180 months, which is the sentence. Well, actually, he didn't exactly receive 180 months in the previous case because he got a slight reduction for substantial assistance, but he was subject to that 15-year mandatory minimum back in 1995. In any event, I would suggest that with regard to the risk of injury, there's even a stronger risk in drug dealing than there is in burglary or arson or extortion. I see that my time, at least minus my rebuttal time, is used up. So unless there are questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Hello, Ms. Joseph.
May it please the Court, my name is Nancy Joseph, and I represent the appellee, DeWeet Fife. Your Honor, since this Court looked at this specific Illinois offense, the statute armed violence, much has changed. Perhaps the Armed Career Criminal Act has been the most frequent visitor up to the Supreme Court in the last 13 years, having gone up in Chambers, Begay, James, and most recently Johnson. So those cases taken together, and particularly Begay, has given this Court more instructions on how to analyze the violent felony, the residual clause at issue here. Now, I disagree with the government on where the starting point is. The government argues that the starting point for analyzing whether this Illinois statute, the armed violence, meets the violent felony definition, the proper starting point is the modified categorical approach. I disagree with that based on this court's recent ruling in Woods, which explains when the categorical approach is to be used and when the modified categorical approach is to be used. As explained in Woods, the modified categorical approach is to be used when a statute is divisible. The statute in question here, the armed violence, which is defined as a person commits armed violence when, while armed with a dangerous weapon, he commits any felony defined by Illinois law. I would submit, Your Honor, that the statute, although it covers a wide variety of conduct, that is, almost any and all felony under Illinois law, it's a general statute. It's not a divisible statute in that it does not differentiate between violent and nonviolent felonies.
So if the
it says any felony, doesn't that invite more scrutiny as to what the felony was?
It defines, I think if the starting point is under the categorical approach to go to the statute. So we go to the statute, and the statute we go to is armed violence, and I just read the definition of armed violence, and it covers any and all felonies. And in that definition itself does not give any indication or indicia of aggressive or violent conduct. I think the court need not and cannot go any further under the categorical approach when reading the armed violence statute. However,
and then, counsel, is your position no armed violence conviction then, because that would stop the court's inquiry, should qualify then for this definition of a violent offense?
That is my position, Your Honor, because if we are starting and ending with the statute, because it is so broad, the way it's written, it covers any. It covers the professor filing the tax and having the gun next to him, or the public defender filing the taxes and having the dinner plate with the cutting knife, right? Because it talks about dangerous weapons. So any and all weapon, any and all felony. And so because it covers both nonviolent and violent felonies, it is my position that it would not qualify as a violent felony. And I think that reading is supported by Woods. I think Woods recognized the tension in my argument, and Woods went on to say that the distinction may seem artificial, but Woods find that distinction was dictated by the Supreme Court's explanation of the categorical approach.
You know, let's go through this for a minute. The categorical approach to the armed career criminal determination requires merely the courts limit themselves to identifying the generic offense involved and refrain from inquiring into the particular facts of the defendant's conduct in a case. Are we together?
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so how is that impacted by determining which Illinois felony was the basis for the armed violence conviction? Because that inquires only into which offense is involved, and it doesn't examine the individual facts of the case.
I would agree, Your Honor, that if the categorical approach does not allow to go into the individual facts of the case, but if the starting point is the statute itself, that is, the sentencing judge is to go to the statute and look at what the armed violence is and how it's defined by the legislature and nothing more. Once we go one step beyond that, then we're beyond looking at the statutory elements. Now we're going more into the Shepherd approved documents. And that is allowed, but under the modify approach. You know, I'm seeing that my time is fast approaching, so I do want to get to the second part of the analysis. That is whether or not this court start and end with the categorical approach or decide that the modified categorical approach is appropriate, the court then has to engage in the Begay analysis. And under Begay, using the framework set by Begay, armed violence here, and if we are going to look at the modified categorical approach and look at the and look at the underlying felony, which was possession with intent to deliver less than 1 gram of cocaine, that conduct is not conduct that is violent and aggressive. I would admit that it's purposeful in the sense that it requires knowledge that one possessed the firearm. But that in itself, recall that armed violence only require that the person possess with nothing more. It's a temporal requirement. While possessing the drugs, you possess the firearm. It does not require that the firearm be possessed with the purpose of protecting the drugs, as the government are.
So let me get this right. If you believe that under the modified categorical approach, if we look at it that way, the offense here is not one that would be a violent felony for purposes of the armed criminal determination. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying that, Your Honor, and I am saying that because if you look at the modified approach, under Begay, number one, the court has to analyze whether it's purposeful, aggressive, and violent, and number two, whether it's similar in kind and in degree to the enumerated offenses. Now, as far as the purposeful, I would admit that it's purposeful only in the sense that the person has to knowingly possess the firearm. Has to knowingly possess the dangerous weapon. But I would dispute the aggressive and violent. Because
you're going after this issue about use of the gun, I think. Mere possession, you think, isn't enough. But I think when you combine that with drug distribution, mere possession, knowledge of it, et cetera, we've held a lot of time. You know, you just put the gun on the table. You're not using it. It's just there. They see it. It's there. And you're doing the drugs. Using, you're not pointing a gun at somebody, you're not waving around, not doing anything else. I think we don't have to go that far.
I think Begay requires more, because for Begay you have to look at indicia of aggressive and violent conduct, Your Honor. And the reason I think it requires more is because there has to be some kind of nexus between, I would think it would require some kind of nexus between the violent felony and the gun.
Well, if it's not contested, you know, let's just say it's a congenial transaction. You got the gun and everything else, but here are the drugs and here's the money, and it's over. So that's not violent. So it doesn't qualify. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I am saying that, and I'm saying although the government can cite to many cases showing violence in drug dealing, mm-hmm. I could cite to an equal number of cases where in drug dealing there's no violence involved.
We assume it's not a life and death effort every time. I assume that. There are transactions that are, you know, the one person gets what they want. Both get what they want. One gets money, the other gets drugs, and transaction's over.
Absolutely.
That isn't the nature of the beast, unfortunately. It's a risk every time. It's like the burglar on the house. If nobody's there, there's no threat of violence. If somebody's there, it could be life and death. But burglary is always considered a crime of violence, of a dwelling.
I think what's the difference between the my time is up, but however, what is the difference with the burglary situation and the drug dealing situation that you just described, Your Honor, is that you have two consensual actors both wanting to participate in that. So I think it is not enough. I think what the old benchmark was under 5-1, the case that this court considered before, was just the possibility of violence. And what Begay is saying is that we assume that there's a risk, as in the DUI, but more than just the possibility of violence is required.
Well, wouldn't then we have to look beyond the mere definition and see whether there was a gunfight or not at the transaction, which
no.
I don't think was what Begay is asking us to do.
No, I think Begay and the line of cases talk about looking at the category of offenses in the ordinary run-mill of cases. And the ordinary run-mill of case, even with dealing drug, even where a gun is present, does not always result or involve violence or aggressive conduct. Thank you.
Thank you. Will you add a minute to Mr. Johnson, because we're an equal opportunity torturer here.
Thank you. It's only fair. Let me just make a few quick points in response to Ms. Joseph's arguments. First of all, she gave an example of the public defender filling out a false tax return with a kitchen knife next to her. That would not violate this statute, because the Illinois statutes have a definition of what is a dangerous weapon. It's at 720 ILCS 5/33A-1.
God, you're going to have to move to Illinois.
So I guess I would suggest that that example may not be an apt one. Also, toward the end of her argument, Ms. Joseph made statements to the effect of, well, that this offense wouldn't necessarily result in violence, it wouldn't always be violent, but that's not the standard under the definition. The definition of the otherwise clause is otherwise involves conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another. So this is about committing an offense which creates the risk of violence and injury, not the certainty of violence and injury. Ms. Joseph disagreed with my reference to the modified categorical approach. She said that that's not applicable here under the Woods case because this is not a divisible statute. I would disagree, and I think my argument is supported by a close reading of Woods. Woods at page 404 cited the Smith case, also from this circuit, to write the following, which I think is directly applicable to the case at bar. When a statute encompasses multiple categories of offense conduct, some of which would constitute a violent felony and some of which would not, we may expand our inquiry into a limited range of additional material in order to determine whether the jury actually convicted the defendant or, in the case of a guilty plea, the defendant expressly admitted to violating a portion of the statute that constitutes a violent felony. Such an examination, however, is only to determine which part of the statute the defendant violated. And I think that that's exactly what we have here. We have a statute which by its structure could be violated in a variety of ways, and all I'm suggesting is that we need to look at the record to know, is this Mr. Fife's situation or is this the college professor example or any of a number of other examples
we
could come up with?
How much do we need to know? Do we need to know something more than it was a drug transaction and with a gun in possession?
I would suggest no, because if we start going beyond that,
the way you're going in that direction, you say we've got to look into it and see what kind of a transaction it was.
No, I wouldn't suggest that, but we do need to determine the underlying felony in this situation during which the person was in possession of a firearm. I see that my time is up. Unless you have some questions, I'm finished.
Thanks very much. Case will be taken under advisement.